Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Coach, I didn't lose them because I didn't do a good job recruiting them. I lost them because they cheated. The other account cheated.
Yep.
There's nothing I can do. The other coaches.
With SI's Pat Forty.
They're playing ultimately a losing hand anyway. I mean, they're going to change the bylaws for how you expand the thing, and then they're going to be outvoted.
Here's Pat and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we are still rocking. LaFair, Saban, Fisher. Moves into its second week.
Keep giving it to us, baby. Come on.
Keep giving it. Saban with the walk back, that was no apology.
No.
If anything I said offended anybody, that was one of those apologies.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have singled anyone out, but I did. But I shouldn't have. But I didn't say what I said wasn't wrong.
Yeah. Oh no.
Just shouldn't have said the truth.
Yeah. And I'm sorry Jimbo lost his and we had to walk this back a little bit, but I don't really want to.
Yeah. No, he does not want to walk it back. He's not backing down. So that's still going. Deion Sanders came out, Coach Prime. I thought he could have been stronger.
Yeah. It was interesting. Interview with Jean-Jacques Taylor, who's I'm sure knew him from the Cowboy days. He lives in Dallas. And
great reporter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Had good stuff from Deion. Deion, yeah. He took umbrage, but then he let Saban off the hook and said Saban's basically trying to talk to his boosters. And then he did what coaches tend to do in these situations. Like, you don't want to mess with me because I know everything, basically. I know about all the bags and where they've been dropped and everything, but they never actually say where the bag was dropped, for whom, or for how much. They just say, yeah, I know about it, so don't mess with me.
And again, I'm going to say this. Head coaches usually don't know anything.
No.
They're not good with dirt. Everyone's like, Saban knows what he's talking about.
Right.
Assistant coaches can know what happened. But they often make stuff up to save their ass with their head coach.
Yeah, when you lose a recruit.
Yeah. Coach, I didn't lose them because I didn't do a good job recruiting them. I lost them because they cheated. The other account cheated.
Yep.
There's nothing I can do. The other coaches. And so you hear that. Details from assistant coaches are rare. Details from head coaches, almost non-existent. Because head coaches don't get involved in that because they're the head coach. The only way you ever really find out what someone's paying is if you have one of the parties involved in the payment, either the payer, the booster, or a coach in that case, or a player and his family who are getting the money. Otherwise, it's a lot of rumors and I know and this. So who, you know.
The temporary gift in the middle of that federal trial was TJ Gasnola on the stand. You know, that's when you find out.
That's when you find out. And it's yielded nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's yielded nothing. But that is when you find out. Otherwise, yeah. So I don't know that Coach Prime knows a whole lot either. He's heard a lot of stories, but I don't know where that's going to go. I mean, look, nothing's going to happen to Saban. So that whole bit, Saban, we don't even know what Fisher was alleging. Could have been alleging too much practice. He could have been alleging unofficial visits are being paid. He could have been alleging there's too much, who knows? There was a PED deal back in the 2002. I mean, you don't know. Could have been anything.
Right.
That's all there. Fisher is adamant. KSAT, San Antonio. He did an interview the other day, Sunday night, standing firm on his idea that nobody at A&M got anything.
And he said one out of 11 of their early arrival guys got NIL.
I just researched this, Fisher said in the interview. Of the 11 guys we have in place that came early, one guy has an NIL deal. So all those stories you're hearing are complete lies. Okay. I don't know what 11 came early. And, you know, who knows? It was written on social media. Fisher said to reporter Greg Simmons, you got the news channels that believed it and you believed it. I'm asking you, Fisher said to Simmons, did you do your research? No, you just assumed. And that's the way the world goes now. As soon as it's written on social media and someone says it, you believe it. So where does that put you guys as a reporter? Nobody wants the truth. You want a story and a click and a hit. Listen here, Jimbo. We here at the College Football Inquirer, we want the truth. We can handle the truth.
We can. Tell it to us. Come on. Now, this was that interview. It was classic Jimbo where, you know, his press conference was one thing. That was like barely holding on to sanity rage. This was classic Jimbo, argumentative as hell. Every time the TV reporter tried to open his mouth, Jimbo would shut him up and fire right back at him. It reminded me of Jimbo circa Jameis Winston issues in like 2014, where he's just, you're not going to get a word in edgewise, and if you do, he's just going to shoot you down anyhow. So he's in that mode, and he's still on the muscle. Greg Sankey's attempts to reprimand people into silence hasn't worked too well, at least with the coach in College Station.
He ain't backing down. He says he's not talking to Saban. Not now, not ever. Yeah, that was uncomfortable. It was a little uncomfortable. His defenses of Jameis it's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was sort of like you can support your player without going that far. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at his recruiting class, and the coaches are, I mean, everyone in college football thinks they had some deals to get these guys. I mean, from November 6th on, he gets a 5-star Walter Nolan on November 6th. This is a Rivals 5-star. So a little harder to get than the 24/7 composite or any of that. Gets Evan Stewart after Thanksgiving. And then since then, he's got 4 more in that class. Denver Harris, Shamar Stewart, Jacoby Matthews, Le'Veon Overton. That's a hell of a close. Hell of a close.
Oh, yeah. They must love the color beige there in College Station. That's the draw.
Only one deal.
One deal.
11. What 11? Which 11? Is he protesting too much? Like, what is all this?
Yes, I think he is. I mean, you know, when he started this back in February, Kiffin went there first, of course, as Lane would tend to do, and said something about, you know, that he's surprised they didn't have they're going to have to pay luxury tax at A&M for what they're giving guys. And that's, he called him a clown act. And Jimbo went off on that like twice in the same day, I think, on signing day. Then I think he had something else in April, and then obviously scorched the earth on Thursday of last week. And then again, Sunday night, now to a San Antonio TV station. I mean, it feels to me like you could walk by Jimbo and say, you know, how's your morning going? He's going to say, we didn't cheat. Stop yelling at us. I mean, he is so heavily on the defensive here that it's a little bit, it makes you wonder. Let's just say that.
And he kind of like insinuated last week, he didn't even know if there was a collective. Is there a collective around here? I don't even know. I mean, I don't know whether what they're doing, but if you're paying the guy like $9 million a year, you ought to know.
He would think.
If there's a collective. Find out.
Walk down the hallway to somebody in compliance. Hey, do we have a collective? Yes, we do. How's it going? I think pretty well. Okay, good to know.
Good. Can somebody call the collective and ask them if they're existing? Who paid who?
Yeah.
Of course, SEC came down hard. Reprimand. Mm. Public reprimands.
Yeah.
That ought to do it.
Always does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then they tried to make sure no one was allowed to talk to the media. Boo.
Yeah. And then, of course, Kiffin was the one who blew the whistle on that.
Kiffin.
He was supposed to be on, I think it was Dan Patrick, and told him, like, yeah, we just got told I can't be on.
Oh. SEC, prominent SEC individual beyond the long arm of the SEC law, though, is Coach Steve Spurrier. Former ball coach at Florida and South Carolina. He is allowed to talk.
And does frequently.
Told DogNation.com. I don't know why he is mad at Saban, Spurrier said of Fisher. Did Saban say something that wasn't true? Fisher is going to, you're going to get a strongly worded something from Fisher on this.
Yeah. How about the rest of that comment there? It's like,
yeah, I don't think Saban told any lies in there. So I don't know what Fisher was mad about, since Fisher beat him last year. I guess he can talk now. He hasn't beat much of anybody, but he beat Saban last year. But they haven't won the division or anything since he's there. Did Saban say something that wasn't true? He said again. God bless ball coach.
We needed to hear from the ball coach on this one, and we did. And I could hear a little bit of a tinge probably in those comments of the guy who used to butt heads with Bobby Bowden, who, of course, worked with Jimbo Fisher back in the day as the offensive coordinator at Florida State. So,
yeah, that is true. That's a pretty good bit. I'll say this one thing. This story obviously got a lot of attention beyond college football, which is the part I've enjoyed. some of the commentary, some of the columns by people who I don't think are really in on it. I don't think this part is fair to Saban and Fisher. The idea is that because the guys are getting paid, these guys are flipping out and fighting amongst each other. I don't really know that that's it. I think they both accepted it. They're just looking like, I do think Saban wants some kind of like, what, how is this working? What should I do?
Right.
I don't think he's really that mad about the money. At this
no, point. I don't think he's opposed to the players getting paid. I mean, he never sounded like this, you know, last year when he was just fairly matter-of-factly saying that his quarterback was going to make seven figures in NIL money. With him, like everything else, it boils down to competitive advantage or disadvantage. And I think he feels like he's at a competitive disadvantage and wants to know, what are the rules of engagement? What are we? What can we do? What can't we do? Because this is not the way it was supposed to be. But is this the way it's going to be? And I think that's it as much as anything with him. I don't think he's uptight about the philosophy of whether the players are getting paid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'd prefer they weren't. But at that point, it's like, or he's talking about pooling it so everyone makes money. Whatever, he may have a different strategy. But Saban's going to do whatever the system is. I was looking at this, and this is, we've talked about this a number of times. This is a change from what I would call a passive dollar or a secondary dollar impacting recruiting to a direct dollar.
Yep.
And what I mean by that, if we're going to take under the pretense that college players haven't been getting paid directly under the table, but let's just pretend that, right? At least that's the rule. You take Alabama, and both of us have been to, you know, it's a phenomenal place to see a game. But in 2017, Alabama renovated its recruiting room inside Bryan Denny Stadium. And that's basically, if you're a high school prospect, your parents come to the game, you know, you go into this little recruiting lounge area and hang out, meet the other things, right? So they're going to have signage and all the stuff. Make it awesome, right? So they upgraded it in 2017. Typical, like, what everyone does. By 2020, that room was gone, and they had made a new recruiting lounge that was now double in size to 12,000 square feet.
Yeah.
A 12,000 square foot recruiting lounge that will be used like 7 days a year.
Yeah.
Right? 12,000 square feet is enormous space. And it's even fancier. They got pictures. I mean, it's even better. That's a 3-year flip. That is how recruiting worked. You had to spend tons of money on the littlest things because it might be the 1% or the 0.01% that flips a recruit. It's like anyone could go to a game at Alabama as a recruit and or know anything about Alabama football, which presumably a recruit showing up on campus to see a game would know, and not think, boy, this is a big time operation, right? They have to spend that kind of money to remind you just a little bit more.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Upgrade. And it's part of other upgrades. But even Nick Saban donated $1 million to the cause, not just the recruiting lounge, but there was a lot to it. At the exact same time, Georgia was doing a $200 million glow up.
Yeah.
Of their stuff.
Yeah. No, Georgia's on like the third renovation of a building that opened like 7 years ago.
Yeah, right. You just constantly And in 2013, Georgia spent $581,000 on recruiting. Now, that would be, I'm guessing, mailing, scouting, travel, different stuff. By 2018, 5 years later, and Kirby Smart showed up, it was $2.65 million, five times, basically. In his first 3 years, Georgia spent a little over $7 million on recruiting. Alabama spent $5.5 million.
Hmm.
Yep. So these are millions of dollars that were getting spent on recruiting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, look, if less than a decade ago you managed to be as good as Georgia was on 581,000.
Yeah.
Now, yes, they got better.
Uh-huh. Yeah. They started signing number one recruiting classes, and all of a sudden, then they win a national championship.
But it wasn't like the airfare for the coaches to go out and visit the like. You know, they were getting around. They were visiting kids on high school campuses. They were having home visits. They were like, if you went to a recruiting visit on 2013, it was pretty good at Georgia.
Yeah.
So they spend $2 million more a year on stuff. Mm-hmm. And it works.
Yeah.
But this is a passive dollar.
Right.
And if you're not Georgia, you're not Alabama, and you're not surrounded by talent, you're not able to because Texas A&M did a bunch too. Everybody built up. Doesn't matter where you're at, right? Northwestern's got crazy stuff. Minnesota, wherever you are, you spent more money. But you have to get someone there, hope they like it. Maybe they're a little bit more convinced. Maybe you get a little bit better player. Boom, it's a slow grind. And that's what Saban was dominating because they were way in the lead.
Yeah.
Well, A&M says they didn't do it, but let's pretend they did.
Right.
Okay. They went, or somebody would go with, an aggressive dollar, an immediate dollar, a direct dollar.
Yeah.
And you got to wait years to get the facility upgraded and hope some sophomore comes and loves your video board a little bit more than the other video board. You can sit there coming off an 8-4 season on a 4-4 in the SEC and bang, we got six rivals, five stars, six top 30 players.
Yeah.
And it's a disruption. It's not that millions weren't already spent on recruiting. Because what in God's green earth do you have to, how do you spend $2.65 million to sign 25 players?
That's a hell of a question.
Like on, and you're not paying the players.
Right.
On what?
Yeah.
Like 17 of them are from Georgia. So millions were spent. It's just now it's going to be direct money. Now, Nick Saban, if it's going to be direct money, is going to find a way as best he can to compete in that. We said he can't, eventually he's going to run out of dollars if he's going against A&M. But that's pretty far down the line.
Eventually, yeah. There's reaches a point where you're just running into the very thin margins of differentiation. But that, again, that is what they were trying to do. They were trying to, you know, whatever that 1% extra was going to give us an advantage with, that's what they did. But to your point, instead of having to show recruits, well, here's what the artist rendering of what the building is going to look like when you get here. Well, here's the deal that's going to put $500,000 in your pocket now. And right, so it's a much more tangible, immediate recruiting incentive than, yeah, you're going to have a nice building by the time you're a sophomore. It is a true game changer. And that's how you can see things all of a sudden flipping the axis to the degree that it has. Texas A&M number one. Deion Sanders gets a top player. You know, we cannot say that they got direct recruiting inducements, but it stands to reason that in the new era, things are changing rapidly because inducements are available to the players specifically above the table and relatively quickly.
Luther Bird in East St. Louis, Illinois, going to Missouri.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, it's kind of in-state. East St. Louis is basically St. Louis, but I don't know. Was there something there? Was there something not? I don't know, but I hope there is.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it in a bad way. Don't shoot me, Jimbo. But it's a direct dollar.
Yeah.
You can close gaps quick. You can prioritize recruits. This is why I continue to think a year in, I've been saying this since this whole idea came, that this is going to spread out the talent. Because Alabama's sitting there right now, and I think Nick Saban's going, I had the passive recruiting system that no one really could catch us. Maybe Georgia could, and they did, but hardly anybody else can. Certainly Mississippi State can't. Certainly,
right. No.
You know, the, mm-hmm. the schools where I raid, Alabama gets a lot of players out of Mississippi and places like that. Like, they can't catch us because we'll just keep upgrading our recruiting room every 3 years, too.
Yeah,
right. But now, when it's a dollar-for-dollar thing, it becomes a factor. Because, look, if you were looking for a new job and someone said to you, hey, you want to switch jobs? I'm pretty happy here. Wait till you see how nice our office is going to look in 3 years. You're like, eh.
Yeah.
How about we raise your salary 10%? Whoa, now what's the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just that this is a disruption, but that's, I don't, you know, I'm looking here and you know, it just, you look at that money, the money was getting spent. It's just, if I'm a college town contractor, I'm crying right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Your sweetheart deal to upgrade every facility, every football facility every 2 years just is being spent instead on edge rushers.
Right. It's going directly to the player and his parents.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing along those lines now, I mean, obviously Saban's biggest selling point has been the NFL draft. We will get you drafted and you will make a lot of money in the draft. And that's still, that's a great incentive. That's
huge.
Yeah. If the players and the families are thinking about it, that should still be the biggest incentive if you're a really good player who can get there. But I think, Pete, that's 3 years down the road, 4 years down the road, whereas, hey, I can get $500,000 tomorrow or, you know, in 6 months when I enroll or whatever the case may be. For some people, that's, hey, I'll do that and then I'll make it the NFL from wherever I'm going. You know, I think there's that's playing at least a 3 year, 4 year long game of development and then becoming incredibly rich as an NFL player. There's some competition along that line of attack now as well.
Yeah, and that's what we'll see with A&M. What'd you do with these guys?
Right.
Everything's so new. Everyone's reacting to the second.
Right.
But there's been 24 college football playoff games ever played. Five schools have won 23 of them.
Yeah.
Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, LSU, and Ohio State have 23 wins of the 24. Oregon, in the first year, won a game.
Yep.
Haven't been seen since. So the chaos, the disaster, the this. really?
Yeah.
And I'll say this over and over. Haven't heard any parents complaining.
No, right.
Haven't heard any players complaining about this chaos other than the unnamed North Carolina player that's worried, right? That told coach
told Mac Brown, "We don't want this. We don't want
I'm not this. Sure. It's fair. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's concerns, I'm sure, but I mean, you know, I'm hearing a lot of complaints. And if I'm Mississippi State or I'm Wake Forest or I'm Indiana, this is giving you a better shot because you can't upgrade fast enough. The system was built for the establishment and you're not the establishment and you're never going to out facility places like Alabama and Georgia. And they've got a million other things going for them already anyway. I mean, that's not the only reason that like Georgia's recruiting class got really good, believe me. But you can't do that. But because even if you'd have to spend $2.65 million a year on recruiting for years and years and years, well, now maybe you can get a guy that you weren't going to get. The other thing is there's still the same amount of football players out there.
There are.
Now, if we're talking about the thing that's going to screw this up for the next couple years, and they will regret doing this. I know why they're doing it, but I regret that. They're going to regret this. Is they're now going to allow schools to sign up to 40 players a class. That means it's a lot easier to run off people.
Yeah, exactly.
And the number one thing that if you want to make competitive balance in college football, drop your scholarships from 85 guaranteed to 70.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I've said that. I
right.
Absolutely agree with that.
If Alabama can sign 40 guys a year and say, you're our guy, they're going to get 40. And those last 15 would have gone to Mississippi State or Wake Forest or Georgia Tech or wherever, right? And then the ones they don't like that they got that didn't pan out are just, there's just more of them are going to get run.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And so then, yeah, there will be redistribution that way. But
I was on in Huntsville, Alabama. I think it's The Drive with Wes Neighbors and Steve Moulton. They got a fun radio show up there. And Wes Neighbors, who played at Alabama in the early 80s, his father, I think it's Billy Neighbors, was in the first Bear Bryant recruiting class at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And he said Bear Bryant signed 108 guys, brought in not even joke.
Yeah.
And only like 10 were there at the end.
Yeah. Sure.
And I think, 100 people, they came on track, they came, whatever. He had 100 new players because not only was that just basically a tryout back then, but you kept those guys from going to Ole Miss or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're stashing them on your own practice squad, basically. And then, the guys that never play eventually leave. But
yeah, this give me 40 guys, that's not going to help. Whoever voted for that wasn't Ohio State or whatever and Alabama, and that was not a good vote.
No.
I know, like, so, you know, some of it's like, well, I get it. You don't want to put it, you don't have a team with like 45 people, they're going to get injured. Anyway, it's wild out there, but a lot of the reactions are just as wild.
Yeah. No, change is difficult in college sports. They're not used to it, and especially change that's powered from somewhere other than the top down, which is kind of what's happening here. And in a sport that is always a group of sports that's always been driven by bureaucrats deciding what's best for everyone else, That's not the way things are working right now.
All right, Pat, you had a good story on SI.com ranking the 15th biggest rivalries in college football. The hate meter, the hate-a-rama, if you will.
Bad blood power ratings. Yes, sir.
The bad blood power ratings. That's what he's calling it. So you may or may not guess what's number one now, which wasn't about. But let's run through these. Top 15.
Yeah, for some reason, this seemed like a good time to refresh the bad blood ratings. I don't know why.
It does move because, things get like right now, Ole Miss and Mississippi State aren't really that good.
No.
The coaches are getting along.
Yeah, Leach and Kiffin like each other. So even though they're both characters, they're not using their character platforms to stab each other.
Massively disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Considering a dog urination touchdown celebration set off two coaching changes.
Yeah.
You know, we could have done a little better.
We could.
Anyway, number 15, TV versus everybody.
Yeah.
Good point. Everyone's mad at their kickoff times.
Yeah. People are mad at their kickoff time, or they think that it's some TV networks helping out another conference too much. Right? You know, everybody distrusts ESPN because they're supposedly in bed with the SEC. Then other people are mad because Fox is like serving as an advisor and even sitting in on negotiations for the Big Ten with other networks. And then there's the kickoff time that everybody, which is classic. I really like the Fox Big Noon kickoff concept. I think it's great. You get people up and excited and talking about your game at 9 a.m. and you go right
into
it. And
you're not the only one. The numbers are great behind it, too.
Well, so that's the biggest reason why they're having those games then, because you're getting a good matchup right away and people are excited and they're watching it. And then, Texas, we can't play Alabama at 11 a.m. We can't do that. That's ridiculous. Well, you're going to, because
of course,
the money says so.
We had to hear about the Maryland game where it was 100 degrees lost.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. This is Alabama. You need to, Nick Saban ain't going to be worried about the 100-degree weather.
No.
Come on. What are the Texas fans angry? I mean, it cuts seriously into pregame drinking.
Yeah, no, and I can understand being disappointed in that.
And you figure they're going to get their ass kicked, so the after isn't going to be much fun?
I don't know. It's going to be too hot. It's like it's September 10th in Austin. It's going to be hot at night. It's going to be hot in the middle of the afternoon. It's going to be hot in the morning. It's going to be hot all day. Deal with it. They love to complain. But the 11 a.m. kickoffs have become a real whining point for everybody in the Central Time Zone.
All right, number 14, Texas versus TCU. All right.
Yeah.
Mainly because Texas stole TCU's coach.
Yeah, they hired Gary Patterson after TCU pushed him out. They're like, yeah, we'll give him $150,000 to be the special assistant to Sark, which means $150,000 in charge of having the most complete scouting report possible on one opponent on November 12th, that being the Horned Frogs. How do we beat them? That's Gary Patterson's job for $150,000.
All right. Number 13, Michigan State versus Michigan.
Yeah. And that's not even factoring in the drunk attorney general. But beyond that, I mean, you and I were both there that game. That was an epic game. Fantastic game. Incredible anticipation. And then there was a bunch of controversial calls, and they basically all went in favor of Michigan State, and the Michigan fans were mad, and Harbaugh was mad, and all the Wolverine people were mad. So I think that's kind of stuck with a lot of people. I mean, Michigan State walked off with, again, the bragging rights, as they have often in that rivalry recently. But Michigan had the better season. But Michigan State can say, we still beat you head-to-head. So I think
that's a tough one for Michigan. First off, Michigan State and Michigan always hate each other, so they could be top 15 at all times.
Right.
That's a tough one because you do beat your rival, but then they just go on to have Michigan fan doesn't care about that game anymore.
Right. I mean,
they beat Ohio State.
That's the thing. Once the season turned out the way it did.
I'm going to guess on this list, this will not be Michigan's last. Texas is probably not either because they fight with everybody. All right, number 12, Auburn boosters versus Brian Harsin. No question.
Yeah.
They really don't like Brian Harsin. They tried to fire their coach after one season where he went 6-7.
Yeah. Well, basically mounted a shadow campaign about off the field stuff. And now, Jimmy Rain, the Auburn trustee, disputed the notion that he or any of the boosters attempted to undercut or oust Harsin, but you can believe what you want to believe, and We certainly know how things tend to transpire down there when the boosters fall out of love with the head coach.
On the sliced bread scale of truth and accuracy, that one that seems to rate. Number 11, Rose Bowl versus playoff expansion.
So yeah, the Wetzel entry here, your favorite thing. The sunset dictating all things in the playoff. I did say that if an asteroid were headed for the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day at 5 o'clock, the game organizers would say, no, we're going ahead with kickoff. They just don't care as long as they get their third quarter sunset.
Except for that time they moved it to Arlington, Texas. The sunset over the Walmart. They didn't care then. The Alliance versus playoff expansion, number 10.
Yeah, that's one. There is definitely some bad blood there. It's all administrative, but it's real that Greg Sankey and the guys that worked with him to expand the playoff, Craig Thompson of the Mountain West, Jack Swarbrick of Notre Dame, and Bob Bowlsby of the Big 12, they had their plan. It was well received. We were going from 4 to 12, and then the Alliance hit the brakes on it and just basically gummed up everything, and it didn't happen. And there has been, I think, lingering unhappiness between those two camps. And I was at the San Francisco Regional in basketball where George Klyakov and Jim Phillips were just thick as thieves and kept a stony silence and distance from Greg Sankey, who was at the other end of the scorer's table.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah.
Bad blood. Well, the thing is, Sankey keeps warning them. They believe that SEC will come back to the table, and preferably with the exact plan they just offered, because it was a really good one. And Sankey keeps saying no. And when they get 16 teams, I don't know. I am not ruling out a four-team SEC playoff before they even then get into the actual four-team playoff.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This is a massive gamble by the other leagues.
It really is in a situation where they're playing ultimately a losing hand anyway. I mean, they're going to change the bylaws for how you expand the thing, and then they're going to be outvoted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Once it's not right now, every conference has veto, but that's going to be gone quite soon. So, all right, that's number 10. Number 9, Washington versus Washington State.
Yeah.
Apple Cup bitterness. Really?
Apple Cup anger.
Who's paying attention?
Last year, Washington State won the game, and you know they did what fans do after you win a big rivalry game. They stormed the field. But the game was in Seattle. It was at Washington Stadium. That was a strong move by the Coug fans. And they beat them by their biggest margin of victory ever in the Apple Cup, 27 points. So you combine that, but their fans all over your field and planting their flag at midfield. Oh, I think that's got to lead to some riled up Husky fans.
I mean, I hope so. At least show a pulse out of that program.
Yeah.
This is way too high. No way. I mean, it's humiliating having the other team storm your field. I agree. But that is a sign of how bad it is.
Well, it is. That's a sign that your 4-8 season was pretty disgusting and nobody really wanted to be there at the end of that game. They evacuated the premises.
The Husky fans sparked up a joint and rode their skateboards back to the dorm, and that's it.
It could be.
In 1958, UTC tore down Tennessee's goalposts after they beat them at their place.
I respect that. That's strong.
Very strong.
I'm seeing they're still bitter. Still bitter up there at UT. Number 8, Lane Kiffin versus Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah. He got there first. Kiffin went there first. You know, on signing day. Like I said, we just talked about him. Yep. Irresponsible as hell, Jimbo said.
Yeah, he called him a clown act.
Mm-hmm.
I think even Lane probably admits he sometimes acts like a clown. Number 7, LSU versus Florida. I believe this is what, because of the thrown cleat game? What do we got?
Well, we got the thrown cleat game in 2020. We had last year when LSU won as a 12.5-point dog. That rivalry's been off the rails for a while. If you go back, remember the hurricane postponement of 2016 where like LSU basically said Florida was chicken. You know, we're ready to play. The hurricane ain't going to be there. You should play the game. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, Florida got mad
the
about
Weather
that.
Channel game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Weather Channel game. So it's been good since then. And then, yeah, the last 2 years have been crazy. And then Billy Napier, like a lot of people thought he might be the guy at LSU, and I think he probably thought he might be the guy, and he never got a sniff of the job. And so he ended up at Florida instead. That was just a little dynamic there.
They do play every year, right? That's their crossover game.
Yeah, for now, until they change the schedules.
Yeah.
Go to pods.
Number six, Pat Narduzzi versus Lincoln Riley, the Pitt coach versus the USC coach. And obviously, Jordan Addison has made his commitment. He's heading to USC.
Yep. Yep.
Was there a tampering?
Oh, we heard a lot of tampering thrown around on that one.
Can USC win the Pac-12 this year?
I mean, I think it depends on two things. Can they block, and then can they tackle? Yeah. Right? Fairly important things. Can they throw and catch? Yes. Will they have a good running game? If they can block. But, I mean, they have skill position talent deluxe. The question is what they've been able to do in terms of upgrades. And you know how it is. You can't fix an offensive line super fast, and usually can't fix a defensive line super fast. So we'll see where they are there.
Yeah, you might need they could have used a Bednarik Award winner, like that. Best defensive lineman to come in. Very interesting to see what. I mean, they got weapons. I mean, they should score points. It should be exciting for USC. Do they have enough?
Right.
Oregon and Utah still pretty strong. All right, one of my favorites, SMU versus TCU is number five. TCU and two hate fests going on right now.
How about that?
Battle for the Iron Skillet, which I personally like because you can cook out of the trophy.
Yes, you can. You can cook out of a trophy or beat somebody over the head with it. And I think right now, those fans, especially on the SMU side, would like to beat the Frogs over the head because they took their coach. I mean, that's been a big rivalry for a long time. And Sonny Dykes just up and left the D of the DFW Metroplex for the FW. And he's the new coach at TCU. And last year's game ended with a bunch of the usual kind of, you know, hurt feelings because SMU won and then tried to plant a flag. And then there was a fight. And then Gary Patterson was ripping ripping SMU and that sort of thing. But having Sonny Dykes. And they made
fun of Gary Patterson's song too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. You love a good Texas chippiness battle.
All right. Number four, Brian Kelly versus Notre Dame fans.
Yep. Yep. That's number four and number three, both blue blood schools that had their coach jilt them. And
so number three is Oklahoma fans versus Lincoln Riley. Yeah.
Had their successful coach jilt them and didn't handle it especially well. Now, I think the anger towards Kelly was a little more justified because he did literally run out on a potential playoff team.
But he did not raid the roster.
He did not.
Or as Lincoln Riley said, I didn't take anyone from Oklahoma. I took them from the portal.
Yeah, that was one of the great semantics quotes of the offseason.
Well, a portal's got to have two. There's an entrance and an exit to the portal, right? So the entrance was in Norman. The exit was in. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. Lincoln, who on this hates more, Oklahoma fans or Notre Dame fans?
Oklahoma fans. I agree. Yeah, I mean, their anger was incredible, and then it only got worse when Caleb Williams left and Mario Williams left, receiver and quarterback. And I just think that level of vitriol has been extremely high.
Yeah, the Marcus Freeman high is enough to make like a lot of Notre Dame fans. They were mad he left. They hope he loses, but they're very, very excited about the potential of this Marcus Freeman era. I'm not saying Oklahoma fans aren't also excited about Brent Venables, but he isn't as cool as Marcus Freeman.
Right. And he may be great, but
he may be great, but he's got to prove great, but they've also had great.
Yeah.
But no, Oklahoma fans are just upset the whole bit. I mean, when they started saying like, you know, he shouldn't have gone because the taxes are too high. USC worried if he could make the money.
And he's getting $90 million. I think he can afford the taxes.
Yeah. All right, number two on the list, Jim Harbaugh versus coach third base, Ryan Day.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the classic.
This one wasn't mean enough.
Yeah. That's when you knew Harbaugh was fully back, when he threw in the postgame barb after he finally beat Ohio State and beat him bad. And won the Big Ten East and went on to win the Big Ten Championship. And he said, sometimes people that are standing on third base think they hit a triple, but they didn't. And there was no doubt who he was referring to there. And yeah, as if Ohio State, Michigan needed a little more juice, it got it.
Ryan Day handed the Ohio State job where bootstrap Jim Harbaugh started at non-scholarship University of San Diego.
Yep.
Ohio State's season this year is going to be really interesting. Expectations are as high as ever, but there's that flicker in the back of little Buckeye fans' minds. What if the program is slipping with Ryan Day?
Right.
And it doesn't take much to slip when you're on top. That's the problem.
No, that's the thing. You go from 12-0 or 11-1 to 11-2, and now you got a problem because you didn't win a championship at 11-2, or you didn't make the playoff.
And you got all this talent. We didn't quite do it. So this is the burden, right? You get the program. But what if Ohio State's recruiting is not, it's very good, but it is not that yet at that elite level they were used to this year. They may still get there. It's early.
Yeah.
But they're not threatening to have the number one class or anything like that. It's 1 year. That Notre Dame game to open the season, Ohio State should win that game.
Yes, absolutely.
But they kind of need, but that doesn't help because then it's like, you need to win this game probably handily. And then they get Michigan at the end. I mean, they should be fine. I don't see a lot on here. They got Notre Dame. They should beat them in Columbus. First five games in Columbus, Arkansas State, Toledo, Wisconsin, Rutgers. If you're going to buy that Wisconsin can beat Ohio State this year, they never do. But otherwise, bang, they're at Michigan State. Then they get Iowa at home. Then they're at Penn State. Then they're at Northwestern. They get Indiana at home. They're at Maryland. Michigan travels to the Horseshoe.
Yeah. On paper right now, favored solidly in every game.
Solid favorite to go 12-0. But that's the bird. I mean, they got C.J. Stroud. They got a ton of guys. But better go 12-0. You know, you can't have a Michigan State pop up. You can't have a Penn State pop up. You sure can't. You know, just things get nervous, right? What if Notre Dame's in it?
Right. So
fascinating season for Ohio State coming up.
Yeah.
Finally, number one, you have Despicable Nick versus Jimbo.
Pretty obvious. It's given us two complete podcasts worth of venom and anger. So it's a clear number one. Yeah, so far. Still early.
Yeah, so not bad. All right, we're going to get that. New contender for favorite player in college football.
What do you got?
Central Florida. Kicker.
Oh,
freshman kicker. Yeah. Colton Boomer. That is his name. Colton Boomer, which is a great name for a kicker.
Yes.
The Boomer, but even better, his high school yearbook. You know, you got to do the immortal high school senior quote. Colton Boomer's high school senior quote, kicking bombs and kissing your moms. Kicking bombs. He is the field goal kicker. Kissing your moms. Colton Boomer and the moms of his high school.
It's unbelievable. I am not in favor of censorship, obviously, but if there's a yearbook advisor looking at that saying, are we really sure we want to go with this?
I think there's some discussions around the dinner tables of Lake Mary, Florida. Hey, mom. Remember that time you offered to give Colton a ride home? You dropped me off first. Was Colton Boomer out there locking lips with the moms of the class of 22?
If you see the picture too of Colton, he's got the hair flow going.
The Cougars would get excited about this. No question, he's a good looking dude. I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Well, you just read it on the internet. You assume it's true, right, Coach Fisher?
There you go. That's it.
Colton Boomer away from mom. Gus Bus used to be a little worried because that will divide a locker room really quick.
Oh, boy. Yeah, now that would really do it.
You do not need the kicker. What did Peyton Manning once call his kicker? The idiot kicker? Yeah. His idiot kicker got drunk.
Yeah, you don't want the idiot kicker out there trolling through the parent tailgate before games saying, yeah.
I mean, he just kissed him. Kicking bombs and kissing your moms. So, Colton, all right, keep us posted, please.
Yeah.
On your senior quote.
We'll see. If Colton gets too frisky with that, somebody's going to crush him on a scrimmage kickoff at practice. You know,
decleat the kicker. That's always a classic. They also have you. By the time he graduates, there's going to be a floating pool outside the stadium. So there's going to be some pool party tailgates that are going to offer him some. Situations.
That's it. Yeah, we're going to have to keep an eye on young Colton's career.
You know what Coach Prime said? We need extra coaches to keep an eye on these young men. Colton needs a...
Remember the UNLV like quarterback or backup quarterback? What was he involved? He was eating sushi off of a model or something?
Yeah,
some reality show.
Below Deck, the reality show Below Deck, where they rent yachts, and he apologized for this, which is again, you go to UNLV. This isn't BYU, or maybe like even then they probably not against the rules because no one would have thought to create that rule. But what UNLV fan was upset that their backup quarterback ate sushi off a nude model on a reality show?
I don't think there was a lot of offense taken in that fan base.
No, a totally unnecessary apology. All right. My colleague at Yahoo and Pat's former colleague at Yahoo and our friend Jay Busby, great writer, great a lot of things at what he does. He's got this newsletter called Flashlight and a Biscuit. I encourage you to find it. It's like a Substack. Sends it out like most Saturdays. You get like this little, he writes something, usually about Southern culture. It's pretty funny. And this week's edition is right up our alley. He has a collection of one-star reviews of Waffle House. The Yelp reviews of Waffle House, as he puts it, how can you be angry at a Waffle House?
Yes, that's my point. I'm like, come on.
Presumably,
you know what you're getting into.
None of the reviews are written by Gus Malzahn. We're pretty sure of that.
Right. We live in an angry society. This is a statement of fact. Whole lot of us spend our days seething with rage, just looking for an outlet to unload all that tamped down frustration, anxiety, and wrath. But yes, I mean, as Jay puts it, the flaws of Waffle House are the feature, not a bug. Like, it's not, you go to Waffle House, you get what you get. That's, I mean, you just get what you get, you don't get upset.
Right.
I want to play this. This has nothing to do with Flashlight and a Biscuit. We'll get to the reviews, but Sully, play the Anthony Bourdain, who I miss his show greatly on CNN, is the only reason I would ever watch cable news of any sorts was the Anthony Bourdain show, and I haven't watched since pretty much. Play his description of Waffle House.
It is indeed marvelous. An irony-free zone where everything is beautiful and nothing hurts. Where everybody, regardless of race, creed, color, or degree of inebriation, is welcomed. Its warm yellow glow, a beacon of hope and salvation, inviting the hungry, the lost, the seriously hammered all across the South to come inside, a place of safety and nourishment. It never closes. It is always, always faithful, always there for you.
There you go. Waffle House, the best. All right, so some one-star reviews of Waffle House. What is wrong with people?
That was a beautiful ode from our man. Yeah, no, it's awesome.
One star. Everything is sticky. The food is all greasy. And the employees act like they don't want to be there. Exactly.
Exactly.
I took my four-year-old out for a waffle and he loves it. I had never taken this particular Waffle House and boy was it a special. Here's the list of firsts. This four-year-old got indoctrinated early. Waitress takes a phone call in the middle of taking our order, tells me to hold up. When my boy asks about the tattoo on her arm, she grants him knowledge that, quote, once you get a tattoo, you're going to wind up back in jail. Once the police know to look for that tattoo, you're going to wind up back in jail. Advice from the waitress. The waitress takes another phone call and walks out the back door to take it. Proceeds to lock herself out and the customers just let her in.
I love it.
Here's one. The waitress attacked me with my spoon after I found it to be dirty and showed it to her.
Attacked me with the spoon.
Furthermore, they forgot my waffle. Didn't toast my boy's toast either. toast that wasn't toasted.
Do we know which Waffle House this is?
No, I don't know. It doesn't say.
See, that's. I would kind of like to avoid the one where the waitress may attack you with a spoon.
Yeah, we need some origin story on that one. People in here are so rude. Do not come here if you want a good meal. Kicked my friend out after dropping her debit card in the ground because she was, quote, too drunk. Absolutely ridiculous. Food was not good either.
That sounds like she was at a Huddle House. Not a too drunk at Waffle House. That's not even.
Yeah. Is that possible? Is it possible to be too drunk at Waffle House? That's the question.
If you want Jerry Springer style entertainment during your breakfast, please go here. The main cook, second cook, and waitresses are always into some dramatic real life work related drama. Initially, you find it humorous until you realize you've been waiting for your food 35 to 45 minutes. Food is good, but you're going to wait and you're going to hear a whole lot of drama. Bring your camera because it's YouTube worthy. Again, this is a positive.
Right? Exactly. Where's the problem?
This one might have been drunk when they wrote the review. Poor service, trifling and rude. Coffee tastes like cigarettes. The only good thing about the place is the scrambled eggs.
That's how it was spelled. Yeah.
We went to this location on New Year's Day. The server seemed to be drunk.
New Year's Day. You're on a Waffle House.
Was this a poem? We went to this location on New Year's Day. The server seemed to be drunk. Complained why we are ordering waffle only. Oh, my God. The restrooms were so dirty. Me and my husband had to go to Home Depot to wash our hands. Afterwards, the kitchen floor was dirty. I don't know how to start. Smashed food, plastic utensils was all over. He dropped our cream cups on that dirty floor, picked it up, put it on our table. I asked him for clean ones, put the dirty ones back, gave me another one.
Yes, and?
I don't know. What are they complaining about? This place is a freak show. A lot of drunk college students. Staff was turned up. Playing music, dancing, even offered us gin and Chardonnay from a personal stash they had.
That's pretty good.
I'm rating them 5 stars if they're handed booze out.
Although I got to say, Chardonnay, not really lining up with the Waffle House clientele.
Broke plates while cooking, no real silverware. I'm not a fan of Waffle House, but only came because I was outvoted. I enjoyed the freak show.
Okay. Well, Cracker Barrel can serve booze now, so Waffle House needs to do something.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's an escalation right there.
It is. Breakfast wars.
Breakfast booze wars. There we go.
The cook at 1:50 a.m. should respect people that have been waiting in line instead of trying to pick up women. Line cutting isn't okay, especially when a person says they aren't feeling well. Yeah, if the cook is trying to hook up with the customers, yes, he's working at Waffle House. My God.
You think he's worried about getting fired from Waffle House? No. No, he is not.
During the meal, the entire kitchen was arguing, and then one worker played "Take this job and shove it" 7 times on the jukebox, and our own server eventually walked out. Anyways, there's more.
I've spent an embarrassing amount of money on touch tins and Waffle Houses around the South.
Yeah, and then your thing plays in like 3 hours, right? Because
yeah, that's the problem.
It's all backed up.
If there's a queue, yeah.
There's probably a queue going. All right. Anyway, that's the ones. So be nice to your Waffle House.
Yes, please.
Most of those 1-star reviews are actually 5 stars. They just didn't know it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I would read those and say, I want to go there.
Totally not understanding the concept of why. It's like, I went to a basketball game at the Cameron Indoors. Very loud, and I wasn't allowed to sit down. It's like, yeah, that's... Wait, what? Scattered, smothered, covered...
Drunk.
Get it done. Mm-hmm. All right. Appreciate everyone listening. We'll have more on later this week. Keep subscribing. Appreciate you guys sharing us on social media, and we will talk to you later.